Hey everybody, Tom Ritchie here, and I want to welcome you to the second episode of my podcast where I weave together the past and the present. Quick shout out to Linda, early supporter, who coined this phrase, and I think I'm going to go with it. Episode 2 of this podcast is going to focus on the Battle of Lake Trasimene, which took place during the Second Punic War, which was hands down the greatest war the Romans ever fought. And the Romans fought a lot of wars. Now, this isn't just me saying this. The Roman historian Livy, who wrote Ab Urbe Condita from the founding of the city, which is often called History of Rome. This was the most ambitious attempt to complete a full history of Rome from its earliest beginnings to what was then the present at the time of Augustus Caesar. And the Battle of Lake Trasimene is one of three major defeats on the Italian peninsula that the Romans suffered at the hands of Hannibal. Now, the reason I want to talk about this battle is because I saw a battle a lot like it on the most recent episode of Game of Thrones. Spoiler alert, although I know most people are either watching Game of Thrones or they're not. But if you're one of those people that's behind, you may want to just listen to my previous podcast or podcast that will follow this. But at the same time, I am trying to not go into a vivid description of what happened on Game of Thrones, focusing instead of why I was reminded of this battle and how this episode of Game of Thrones gave me a bit of historical clarity that was really failing me when looking at the documentary evidence that's left behind from this epic Roman battle. And of course, we're about halfway through season 7 of Game of Thrones, if you are curious about this and listening sometime later. Now, as far as this is concerned, the end of this episode of Game of Thrones, and by the end, I mean the last 20 to 25 minutes, was an epic ambush dragon battle, just with an army that was marching with a loot train being completely caught by surprise. And what I was watching for, and of course I've watched this, rewatched it about 5 times, and every time I watch it, I've been really focused on the person of Jaime Lannister, the person, the commander, who is being ambushed, and how he responded to this attack, how he responded to this army of barbarian cavalry and a dragon that came out of nowhere, okay? I mean, now, of course, like Gaius Flaminius, the Roman commander, he didn't really do proper recon, evidently, because he was surprised. I mean, if he'd had people placed out, probably wouldn't happen. Same with Flaminius. So let me go into the Battle of Lake Trasimene. One of these days I want to do a video series on the Punic Wars, but let's just go ahead and start here. And again, focusing on classical history, which I love and doesn't get nearly enough attention on my YouTube channel, at least not to this time. Now, the two sources we have for the Battle of Lake Trasimene, neither one is an eyewitness. Neither one was even alive at the time. So we assume that both of these historians are dealing with evidence that was originally written down by someone else, because they would have had no way to speak to an actual eyewitness. And of course, with the defeat that the Battle of Lake Trasimene was, the magnitude of this defeat, where the Roman army was destroyed, there weren't a lot of eyewitnesses to talk. But the two historians I'm going to be looking at are Polybius and Livy. Now, Polybius was a Greek historian who lived around about a century after the Second Punic War. He was actually an eyewitness of the Third Punic War. He traveled with Scipio Aemilianus to North Africa and saw for himself the sack of Carthage. But he was not present during the Second Punic War. Now, one thing we want to point out about Polybius is his history was more of a general history and really in a lot of ways more focused on, you know, history from a Greek perspective. Now, there was Greek history and Roman history. Of course, at this time, because of, you know, the Roman expansion, which the Romans ironically conquered Greece militarily, but then the Greeks conquered the Romans culturally, these worlds really came together in what you could think of as a history, you know, as one classical civilization. So Polybius is really writing the history of classical civilization as he sees it. And there's a sense of detachment here with Polybius, if you think about it. Here is someone who really doesn't have a horse in the race, and that kind of has to inform his perspective. Now, Livy, on the other hand, was a Roman, and in Livy's history throughout, we see a lot of moralizing that Livy and his approach to history, we've heard this from people before, as far as history being there so that we don't repeat the mistakes, and maybe we can emulate the honorable and wise conduct of others. So history can be a cautionary tale, but also a celebration of Roman greatness, because Livy was of the opinion that the Romans, although they had become wealthy, they had lost something, all right? And so when he's writing history, this moralism comes out over and over again. So on to the story of the Battle of Lake Trasimene. Now, the Romans had been defeated by Hannibal already at the Battle of Trebia. Hannibal had crossed the Alps and faced a Roman army that had really never seen anything like Hannibal, because the Romans had put together what was undoubtedly the greatest offensive force that had ever existed in a military sense. And it was so superior because of the weaponry they made and the tactics that they used. Well, I'm not going to say tactics here, because the tactics were really just bam, 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 all right? Just as far as a football team. Think about a football team that's just running it up the middle, maybe a short pass here and there, but really just, you know, like Alabama football. Just bam, bam, bam. Very physical, very tough. And the Romans, to this point, had always been the more physical army, and they had been able to go directly at their opponents and defeat them that way. Now, Hannibal is the first commander to really employ serious military tactics against the Romans. So at the Battle of Trebia, for example, Hannibal had just crossed the Alps. He still had elephants. There was a river between Hannibal and the Romans. Now, the Romans were on the defensive side of the river. Hannibal would have had to cross it. But instead, Hannibal, knowing his enemy, knowing the Romans, were always going to be quick to engage. The Romans, you know, they weren't going to wait. That's just not the kind of people that they were. So Hannibal knew it was the dead of winter. He could get the Roman army to wade across this small river. Think about being chest deep in freezing water and this hypothermic army. Is that even a word? I know hypothermia is a word, so I'm guessing that hypothermic is also a word. But this army comes across here, and Hannibal just lets the Romans march at him, and then he's got cavalry hidden in the trees. And so the cavalry come out from the Roman rear, all right? So the cavalry is behind the Romans, and the Romans are already engaged. That's where cavalry is most effective, attacking infantry that are already engaged. That's one thing that you can see on the episode of Game of Thrones. You can see where heavy infantry can resist a cavalry charge, which is why before the dragon showed up, Jaime Lannister was thoroughly convinced that we can take them, we can hold them back. But the trick is, unleash the cavalry at the right time and have the Romans hit from the front and the back. So Hannibal, with a smaller force, defeated these Romans. Now, the Romans took a while to learn from their mistakes. It was going to be 16 years before Scipio Africanus finally gives Hannibal his match in terms of military tactics. And Scipio Africanus is really this young military genius that comes around later. But the Romans are defeated, but the Romans they're thinking about, maybe they're insane by whatever that quote is attributed to Einstein. You know, the definition of insanity, doing the same thing twice and expecting different results. But this is what the Romans did, or at least the Roman who was commanding, all right? It was a man named Gaius Flaminius, which he was aptly named because Flaminius has to do with fire, okay? So flaming, fire. And so this guy had a very, very fiery personality. This goes into the struggle of the orders. Here was a man of the people, a man who stood up against the senatorial party and was not very well thought of in the aristocratic circles, referred to by Polybius as a mob courtier and demagogue with no talent for the practical conduct of war and exceedingly self-confident. Now, of course, exceeding self-confidence was a trait of Romans, but what we can see here is perhaps that Flaminius was proud and self-confident even by Roman standards. And so Hannibal knows that he's going to be able to goad this guy, all right? That he knows that this guy is not a great military tactician. He's got a very fiery temperament. And so Hannibal knows that I can draw this guy into an ambush. And so Hannibal finds the place where he wants to do battle. Now, of course, here's the thing, that Hannibal's picking his place and Flaminius is going to march right into his trap. And of course, podcasting is a little bit awkward for this because I'm imagining a map in my head and I'm going to have to describe this to you. So just think about a lake, all right? So you're thinking about a lake, and just north of that lake, there is high ground, all right? So you've got a little bit of space here between the lake and the high ground, and the high ground is heavily forested. Now, with this being a lake as well, in the morning, you're going to see a lot of fog, okay? So as far as this goes, Hannibal brings his army, the main body of his army, and places it in the low ground between the lake and the hills. And then he gets the rest of his army and distributes it in this hilly wooded area that is covered by mist, all right? So he is readying an ambush, and there's enough room if you think about a narrow passageway where an army marching in column formation. Now, keep in mind, if you watch Game of Thrones, you saw that the Lannister army was marching in column formation in marching order. This is where you've got, you know, long lines of people that are not very wide. It's more deep than wide. Now, when you go into battle, you're going into your battle formation, which is wider. But what Hannibal anticipated is if he burned enough of the Roman countryside, if he raided enough, he would get Flaminius so hot and so fiery that Flaminius was going to march right into his trap, that he wouldn't do proper recon, he wouldn't get a lay of the land, he would try to rush into battle early in the morning without sending scouts to see what was going on. And that's one lesson. I think military history isn't emphasized enough in schools because we can learn so much from this, that in life, just like in battle, there is value in making sure that you know the lay of the land and you know what's there and you can anticipate it and you don't make stupid decisions. A lot of times, when we make stupid decisions, it's because of a lack of information. We didn't really do our homework. We didn't really consider the consequences. And maybe we acted too impetuously, that we rushed into something without really thinking about what could happen from that. So as far as this goes, now a lot of the Romans, even though the Romans were always ready for battle, Flaminius was counseled, according to Livy. Those in his council of war told him, we need to be cautious. We need to make sure to have all of our ducks in a row. Perhaps we should wait for the other consul. Remember, the Romans had two consuls at any time, each with equal military and civil authority, kind of like if we had two presidents, each armed armed with a veto and all of that kind of stuff, and each having the power to command an army. So they told Flaminius that you should use, your light infantry and your cavalry to stop the raiding that Hannibal's doing, but other than that, perhaps we should wait for your colleague. Furious, Livy writes, Flaminius stormed out of the council and put up the signal simultaneously for marching and engaging the enemy. Let me read a little bit more from Livy here, just to kind of set up the battle, because there's this high drama, because you see that something is about to happen here, okay? Things are going too well. It's similar if you think about Jaime Lannister, that, oh, the gold's gotten to King's Landing. We were able to do this over in Highgarden. Everything has gone so well, all right? But there's something, you're thinking, okay, something's got to happen here. So, according to Livy, why, yes, he said, let us just sit here before the walls of Aridium. Hashtag sarcasm. This is where our home and our hearths are. Let us have Hannibal slip through our fingers and make a thorough job of pillaging Italy. Let him reach the walls of Rome, looting and burning everything on his way. With this snide remark, he gave the order for the standards to be quickly pulled from the ground, and he himself leaped onto his horse. But the horse suddenly took a stumble, throwing the consul over its head. All the bystanders were terrified at this apparently dreadful omen for the start of the campaign. But, to add to it, word was brought that, despite the standard bearer's greatest efforts, one of the standards could not be pulled out of the ground. Flaminius turned to the messenger. It's not as if you were bringing me a letter from the Senate forbidding me to engage, is it? He asked. If the man's hand is too numb with fear to pull it up, go back and tell them to dig up the standard. With that, the column began to move forward. Now, the irony of this is that Flaminius actually had a more modern sort of mentality when it came to omens and the gods and all of that stuff. But remember that the Romans, just like the Greeks, just like the ancient Israelites, before them, and maybe even at the, close to the same time, the Romans believed that the gods sent omens. The gods let the Romans know if going to battle was a good idea. So according to the Roman superstitious way of thinking at that time, Flaminius should have realized, hey, my horse took a stumble. Omen number one. Omen number two, we can't get that standard out of the ground. Now, Flaminius, although modern day, that stuff doesn't really matter, but at that time, Flaminius was seen as impious, especially by someone like Livy, who was a conservative Roman who believed in the gods. So what happens here is predictable. It's been well set up by Livy, who is always a good read. So Flaminius marched his men in column formation right in between Lake Trasimene and the surrounding hills, and he went to the visible body of Hannibal's army, thinking that that was it, that he was going to engage, and he was annihilated. All right, just wow. I mean, if Hannibal had had a dragon, it could not have gone any better for him than it did. There are accounts from Livy of mothers standing at the gates of Rome as Romans were coming in groups of one, two, and four. There were a few people that got away from the battle. There was no orderly retreat. That army was destroyed. And these mothers, so different from Spartan mothers. Spartan mothers are like, well, if he was defeated, he better be dead. But the Roman mothers, being a bit more attached, are asking, do you know about my boy? And so this was the kind of defeat. Now, this is where things get really interesting for me, because documents really only tell us so much. And I would love to be at that battle and to see it and to observe for myself how Flaminius conducted himself. But what we're left with is an account of the battle from Polybius and an account of the battle from Livy. So let me go ahead and read Polybius's account from the battle. Now remember, Greek historian who is writing a more dispassionate history, something that's not necessarily patriotic, not an eyewitness, but maybe closer to an eyewitness account than Livy, who wrote a century or two later. Having made all these preparations during the night and thus encompassed the defile, with troops waiting in ambush, Hannibal remained quiet. Flaminius was following close on his steps, impatient to overtake him. He had encamped the night before at a very late hour to the lake itself, and the next day, as soon as it was dawn, he led his vanguard along the lake to the above-mentioned defile, with the view of coming in touch with the enemy. It was an unusually misty morning, and Hannibal, as soon as the greater part of the enemy's column had entered the defile, and when the head was already in contact with him. Now remember, this is one of Hannibal's strategies. You wait until the army is already engaged in order to spring your trap. Giving the signal for battle and sending notice to those in the ambuscades, attack the Romans from all sides at the same time. The sudden appearance of the enemy took Flaminius completely by surprise. And as the condition of the atmosphere rendered it very difficult to see, and their foes were charging down on them in so many places from higher ground, they were charged at one and the same instant from the front, from the rear, and from the flanks, so that most of them were cut to pieces in marching order, as they were quite unable to protect themselves, and as it were betrayed by their commander's lack of judgment. For while they were still occupied in considering what was best to do, they were being slaughtered without realizing how. Flaminius himself, who was in the utmost dismay and dejection, was here attacked and slain by certain Celts. So there fell in the valley about 15,000 of the Romans. Now what we see from Polybius is a Flaminius who impatiently goes into this battle, and then when he realizes what's going on, dismay and dejection. Oh, expletive, what just happened here? And he's unceremoniously cut down by quote-unquote certain Celts, all right? So there's nothing really heroic about this at all. Here's a stupid guy, goes into battle, and dies unceremoniously and really disgracefully. You know, just doesn't really know how to handle himself even in the battle. Now, of course, you put anybody in that situation, how are they going to handle it? And what I want to think about here is when you think about, if you watch the episode of Game of Thrones, Jaime Lannister's reaction, you can see a bit of that dismay, a bit of that dejection. Here's Livy's account of the same battle. There was chaos all around, but the consul himself showed considerable composure in such a precarious situation. The ranks were in disarray as men turned in the direction of the confused shouts, but Flaminius formed them up as well as time and their position permitted. Wherever he could go, and wherever he could make himself heard, he encouraged them and told them to stand and fight. They needed force and courage to get out of there, he said, not prayers and petitions to the gods. It was by the sword that a way could be made through the midst of the enemy line, and in general, less fear meant less danger. But over the din and turmoil of battle, advice and orders were inaudible. The battle went on for some 3 hours. It was savage at every point, but around the consul the fighting was even more fierce and violent. Flaminius had his strongest troops alongside him, and he was energetically bringing assistance at any point where he had seen his men under pressure and in difficulties. His armor marked him out, and so the enemy furiously attacked him, and his own men just as furiously defended him. Then, an Insubrian horseman named Ducarius recognized the consul by his appearance. He put his spurs to his horse and thrust forward through the thickest of the enemy. He first cut down Flaminius' armor-bearer, who had thrown himself in the way of his charge, then ran the consul through with his lance. The triarii raised their shields to block the man's attempt to strip the body. Now, just for clarification, the triarii were the veteran Roman troops. They were the spearmen. They would be in the back of a formation. And in a lot of battles, the triarii would never be called in. They would never get to the front because they were typically the last-ditch reserve. So the Romans had a saying, if something is going to be a long battle, even in politics, that this is going to go down to the triarii. And when they talked about this, you knew that this was going to be a very desperate fight. This is going to be a bloodbath, physically or metaphorically. Now, you notice that Livy's account of the battle is very thorough, sometimes too thorough, perhaps. Do you really know the name of the barbarian who killed Flaminius? Maybe not. So sometimes additional details are good, but then sometimes additional details can be suspect. Now, of course, when you look at Polybius, you think of this happening so quickly, but Livy writes, you know, this is a battle that went on for 3 hours, that the Romans see themselves surrounded, they fought as well as they could, and Flaminius is going around at every point giving encouragement to the men. Now, what you can see here in Livy is, although Flaminius was stupid and impetuous, at least he was brave on the battlefield, and in that sense, he was a good Roman. Now, here's where I get into my own philosophy of history, because the simplistic thing to do here would be to pick one of these historians, whether it's Polybius or Livy, and think this one's more reliable than this one. But when you get into the serious work of the historian, a lot of times it's a bit of both, that we really don't know what happened, we're not able to see it for ourselves, and we have to judge from the accounts that we have. And that is why I think that seeing a battle that's made for entertainment is sometimes helpful here, because if you look at the conduct of Jaime Lannister during this episode, he alternates between Polybius's Flaminius and Livy's Flaminius. There is one point where you see that he says, "We can take them." Then he sees that dragon come in. He's staring at that dragon at times. If you were just to take a snapshot of Jaime Lannister at certain times, you might think this man was a coward. This man broke. But then you also see these alternating periods of intense courage, intense leadership, and of course that last ditch effort he made at the end of the battle in this self-sacrificing charge. So although Jaime Lannister put his army in a vulnerable position and did not do proper recon and was destroyed in marching order, in column formation, in the thick of battle, he conducted himself very bravely. But this sort of bravery doesn't come easily when somebody is surrounded, when somebody is ambushed. And this is something that we can think about for life, because there are times when we may not always handle ourselves honorably at every point, that sometimes we cave into pressure. But then alternately, there are times when we can meet whatever challenge that we're facing with courage. And even if this challenge has broken us before, we can, with courage, persist into the end. Now, of course, sometimes in the end you might die, but at least if you do that, you die with courage. So no matter how you're ambushed in life and no matter what kind of challenges you're facing, it's never too late to show courage. And it's never too late to look at the complexities of history. And I hope that this account of the Battle of Lake Trasimene, influenced by a bit of Game of Thrones, was interesting. This has gone a little bit longer than usual, so I'm going to hold off on the Q&A this time. We're pushing 30 minutes, but if you're still listening, thank you so much, and I will be back very soon with another attempt to weave together the past and the present. And remember, a word from our sponsor. I'm my own sponsor. Check out TomRitchie.net and my YouTube channel, social media, and all of that kind of stuff. It's always a pleasure.